Black Oregonians do not get much of a hand in steering policy in the state, and that's got something to do with Oregon's long history of avoidance and discrimination. The Urban League of Portland exists to make the history just that, history, and to secure greater visibility and influence for the state's black population. All of the state's black population. The Urban League hosts occasional community conversations away from Portland, including a session set for next Tuesday in Southern Oregon. Nkenge Harmon-Johnson is president and CEO of the Urban League of Portland and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
It is a pleasure. I should point out that the session includes you as well as Nataki Garrett, the artistic director of the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, and Ashland City Councilor Gina Duquesne on the panel. Let's talk first about the Urban League of Portland, because the name belies the actual mission. You have a bigger zone than that, don't you?
We sure do. Since 1945, the Urban League of Portland has served all of Oregon and Southwest Washington. You know, most of the population of Oregon lives in the Portland metro area, so it stands, and certainly did back then, so it stands to reason that that would be our name. And I'll be honest with you, I don't have the guts to try to change it. but it does mislead some people into thinking that we're not their Urban League. So it's incumbent upon me and my team to make sure that we're getting out and about and touching people so they know that if you live in Southwest Washington, if you live anywhere in Oregon, we are your Urban League.
Have there been regular efforts to visit or at least talk to the far corners of the state?
Certainly during my time. I've been president of the Urban League for a little over 7 years. And we make it our business to get out and about to different parts of the state. You know, our main office is in Portland, and that's where most of our programs are, right? But you can certainly find us in Marion County in Salem for the State Fair. We've exhibited there before, and we held Urban League Day at the State Fair to invite folks to join us there. We're regularly at the coast, both for programming, but also to engage with community members, different parts of the North Coast and farther south. And before the pandemic hit, we had a nice stretch going, participating in the Roundup. We're at the Pendleton Roundup every year, and now we'll be back again this year. We're excited, except for pandemic years, to participate in the Westward Ho Parade, to have a community conversation with folks over in Eastern Oregon, the same way that we're going to be doing next week in Ashland. We do make it our business to get out and about outside of our headquarters.
So talk about the Ashland session. Do you get to Southern Oregon much? You mentioned a couple of instances of places you go. I just don't know about the Southern Oregon part of that itinerary.
Well, not as much as we'd like. But I'll tell you, I have family in Ashland and in the Medford area. So I get down that way personally more than I think the Urban League does. And that's one of the reasons that it's important for us to hold a session like this, is so that we can come out and face-to-face spend time with folks. But we're fortunate. We live in a time of technology, which makes it a lot easier to connect with people in the community than we might otherwise have available to us. So even during the pandemic, we've been able to work with folks in Jackson County via video conference, via phone, so that we can be better in touch and understand the issues that they're facing on a day-to-day basis and try to provide support.
And so how will the session in Ashland next week be conducted?
Oh, so this is the third in our series of town halls just this year. We were just most recently in Hood River with the mayor and a community leader there and with the Rotary Club, that's right, in Hood River. So this session will be very similar. It will be available to folks both in person who can come and join us on the campus of Southern Oregon University for the conversation. It will also be available streaming, and this is something I'm really excited about. The fact that we are now, more of us are more familiar with enjoying content, interacting online than we were before the pandemic, we're able to stream these sessions on the Urban League's YouTube page and on our Facebook page, so that it doesn't matter where you are. Maybe you're sitting in Ashland, but you just don't want to leave the house, or you can't leave the house. Well, you can tune in and watch us there. Maybe you're at work and you've got your lunch break. You can grab your cell phone and you can watch there. Or if the time of the event, 6 o'clock next week, doesn't work for you, you can watch it at a later time. So there's a few different ways for people to engage with us next week.
And that is called an Urban League for All of Us Community Conversation, Southern Oregon, Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. From Ashland and online as well. Featuring our guest, Nkenge Harmon-Johnson, the president and CEO of the Urban League in Portland, Gina Duquesne from the Ashland City Council, and Nataki Garrett, the artistic director of the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. You can join this conversation with Nkenge Harmon-Johnson at 800-838-3760 by phone, 800-838-3760, or send an email to jx. talks@jeffnet.org. You do list specific issues in each region you visit, and the rise of white nationalism is mentioned first in the Southern Oregon event description. Is this a flame you thought had been snuffed out at some point?
No. And I wish I could say yes, right, that I was surprised by what we're seeing. But, you know, but I'm an Oregon kid. This is home for me. So I, you know, as much as it saddens me because I love our state and I love our communities, it's not a surprise to me that white nationalism is on the rise in our state because it's on the rise across the country and, unfortunately, across the globe. So it doesn't surprise me. At the same time, though, you know, we know that Ashland, Medford, the Southern Oregon area is full of lots of folks who wished and hoped white nationalism was a thing of the past. So I think it's going to be an interesting conversation to hear from people who had thought that this was behind us, who are now confronting the fact that it's very much an issue we have to address today. And as we try to figure out what to do next, how do we engage, how do we get beyond, how do we overcome?
Well, so there's a long history in Oregon. I mean, we can go back to the black exclusion laws and beyond, and certainly in Southern Oregon with a heavy Ku Klux Klan presence about 100 years ago. How then do you approach even talking about something that seems like, despite some ancient history, there's certainly some presence as well?
Well, I think one of the important, I'll say it this way, what we've heard from the community, because we don't just choose, you know, topics sort of out of a hat. Oh, what do we want to talk about today? There are folks in the community who've said this is an issue that we'd like the Urban League to address, to highlight in our community. So it was brought to us more than anything. I think what's important to a lot of people in the Ashland Medford area is to simply talk about it out loud on a platform at scale, because there are some folks, even some folks in leadership in Ashland, who say, well, you know, there's no racism here. You know, we don't have bias in our community. You know, white nationalism in Jackson County, that's just sort of a rumor. It's not real. And when you have folks who are in authority who don't see the light, who don't see reality, the people who live in that community who are experiencing racism, who are experiencing bias, and their neighbors who are witness to it, you know, it makes them not only on edge, but also feel as though they don't know where to turn. They don't know what to do next. How can we address a problem if some of our leaders are ignoring the fact that it even exists? So bringing the being attention to the issue and then talking about it in real terms with real people from the community, part of the hope is that it will take the blinders off of some people so that we can begin to address the issue with more unity.
Those blinders don't always come off easily, do they? I mean, because we've had several incidents, certainly in Southern Oregon, where people have reported being harassed, being the subject of racial slurs and threats and things like that. And white people are generally shocked about that, but then they are white people and they are not black and don't walk down the street alone.
Right. You know, it's, you know, as someone who walks around in my skin as an African-American woman and as an Oregonian, I'm sometimes surprised that others can be surprised at the experiences that we can be subject to. I think the folks who surprise me most, I'll be honest with you, are business leaders, you know, Chamber of Commerce folks who don't pay attention to issues of bias and racism and violence and threats in their own communities because it really puts a dampener on their economic opportunities. There are people who say to me now, oh, my goodness, you're going to Southern Oregon. Is that safe? How heartbreaking. Ashland is beautiful, and there's so many wonderful things to experience there if you're visiting. And we have people who would be afraid to go because of the things you mentioned, because of threats, because of potentially being treated poorly because of the color of their skin. That should be a real concern for people who, you know, own hotels, for people who have restaurants, for people who are trying to really encourage tourism and activity in the community. They should be some of the folks at the front of the line to engage in these issues. But what I'm told by some of sort of our local partners is that maybe not so much. They'd rather sort of not talk about it and hope that it goes away rather than to engage on the issue. And I think that just makes it harder for everyone.
So how overcome that sense of retreat and overcome the people who say, you know, I don't see color. I mean, that's not enough, clearly. I mean, what is enough? What do observers need to do to become allies and supporters?
Well, those are great questions. So first, you know, I don't see color. It's such a weird thing to me. You know, why? That would imply something is wrong with seeing color. But there's nothing wrong with it. People are different. You don't see height. There are people who are taller and people who are shorter. it's certainly fine. It's how we, you know, respond and how we react and how we treat one another, despite, you know, what we may see. That's more at issue. So I'm always just sort of fascinated when I hear someone say, well, I don't see colors. Like, that's not what we're after. That is not really the goal. The goal is that we see each other as people and that we engage with each other responsibly and fairly and maybe even with love, right? Because that's what, you know, community really is built upon. But at the very least, Jeff, with tolerance. So you and I don't have to be best friends. Your neighbor and, you know, you don't have to be, you know, chummy, but you can at least be civil and at least tolerate one another. And that seems like the least that we can ask of one another in our communities. But for folks who are looking to do more than that, right, who are saying, okay, this is my community. I don't like the way this looks. I don't like the way it feels. I actually do want everyone to feel welcome in my community. What can I do about it? Luckily, there are some organizations that exist in Southern Oregon that are helping people to do just that. We're really excited about the fact that we get to highlight some folks, and I don't want to sort of let the cat out of the bag because my staff might want me to leave it for a little bit of a surprise during our town hall, but that we'll be able to connect people with some resources and with organizations that are already doing this work locally to help give people the tools to intervene when they see threats being made against someone, or even before that, to come together as community to organize to prevent incidents from even beginning.
Okay, I get the sense that you've already partially answered the next question, which was that part of the program for Tuesday is honoring community champions who are already doing the work you want to see more of. And you're telling me you want to keep the lid on some of that?
Just a little bit. But I will tell you this, right? there are more organizations in Jackson County and Southern Oregon than we could even highlight during our town hall. So it's not as if though we're going to cover all of them. But one of the important things that the Urban League can do when we visit communities in person is to help highlight those local folks who are already doing the work. So it's not necessarily a need for the Urban League to say, oh, we're here and we're going to take care of everything. That's not our role. My preference is to engage with folks who are already doing the work on the ground to figure out how we can support them to do more of what they're already doing. I will mention the Southern Oregon Coalition for Racial Equity. That's an organization in the community that I hope, if folks don't know, aren't familiar with, that they will learn about. The Southern Oregon Coalition for Racial Equity. I hope it's sort of a household name for some people. Mm-hmm. But they're on the ground and they're doing work all the time to organize community members, to organize youth, to talk about what's happening in the community and to help address it. But there are other organizations that we'll talk more about at our town hall next week. So I hope folks will tune in to learn more.
That town hall is next Tuesday, 6 to 7, from Southern Oregon University, featuring our guest, Nkenge Harmon-Johnson, the president and CEO of the Urban League in Portland, Gina Duquesne, a member of the Ashland City Council, and Nataki Garrett, the artistic director of the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. You can get into this conversation now with Nkenge Harmon-Johnson by phone at 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760, or send an email to jx@jeffnet.org. Nkenge, we had a panel yesterday talking about the Oregon State Health Improvement Plan, which is very focused on equity and overcoming a history of institutional racism. Just using that term apparently produces quick denials. I mean, lay out the process for pointing out the record and working then to make the future different.
Oh, goodness. Isn't it interesting that saying institutional racism really does get some people's hackles up?
It does.
And I can't figure it out. But I'm sure you've experienced that just in your own programming when you're talking to folks, right?
Sure.
You know, to me, it's a red flag when folks react strongly to terms like, you know, bias, racism, white supremacy, institutional racism, because we've got to have the words, we have to have the language to talk about what we experience. Otherwise, how can we tackle it? And a term like institutional racism, first of all, it's valid, it's helpful, but beyond that, it's not an attack on anyone. It helps us to focus on the fact that we have institutions that have been built over time, and most of us have inherited, but now it's our responsibility to do something about those institutions, to do something about institutional racism within our organizations, our structures, our community, that prevent all of us from being able to thrive. That doesn't sound like an attack on an individual to me. It sounds like an issue, an opportunity for community to work together to make community stronger and better, and to put public resources in the hands of, well, all of us. And that's different, right? Once upon a time, only men could vote. Okay, well, that's who the public was. Once upon a time, only white people in Oregon, you know, had access to resources and power. Well, that's less and less true every single day, And isn't that what we want our state to be about? All of us as Oregonians having the opportunity to thrive, regardless of your religion, regardless of where you started from, regardless of how much money your parents had, regardless of your zip code, we want Oregon to be for all of us. That's what it means when we attempt to address institutional racism. That's what it means when we come together to talk about how to remove bias from our institutions and our organizations. And certainly when talking about health and healthcare, it's a huge one. I had the opportunity to give a commencement speech to some graduating seniors, high school students, just a couple of months ago. And one of the things I shared with them is that as a Black woman, I will have better health outcomes if my doctor is also Black. Well, how crazy is that? One should be able to walk into a doctor's office, find a primary care doctor, regardless of, you know, their background, and expect to receive high-quality care. But because of institutional racism, because of information that's denied to some folks when they're training as medical doctors, because of the biases that folks grow up with, that we're raised with, that some of them that are that aren't at front of mind, right? They're unconscious. Those things impact the way that healthcare is delivered. Well, it's important that I know that for my own health and welfare, but it's also important that our medical systems know that and seek to root out the underlying problem. And what's so difficult about that? Why wouldn't we want that to be happening? I'm excited that the conversation is being had by OHIP, but I really hope that others will be able to have a little introspection, think for themselves about their piece in solving the larger challenge.
And to look around and look through a different set of eyes, you know, not to assume that everything is always hunky-dory because you've always thought it was.
How about that? Wouldn't that be an approach?
Truly. About a minute left, Nkenge, if you can just talk about the format for the community conversation. Don't have a lot of time, a whole hour, it sounds like.
Sure. Yeah, a whole hour, right? And this is, you know, we could certainly spend two or three or even more, but we found that this is the sweet spot for conversations like this, because our goal is to make sure that people are able to hear from Councillor Duquesne, they're able to hear from Artistic Director Garrett, and we'll get questions from people online, mm-hmm. From Twitter. Your people are welcome to send questions via Instagram, via Facebook, and even during the event, while the stream is on YouTube, folks can, you know, add comments or they can ask questions. People in the audience will be able to ask questions. So we will be able to interact and share ideas. The idea isn't in this 1 hour from 6 o'clock to 7 o'clock p.m. next Tuesday. The idea is that we're not going to solve all of the questions that come out. But we are going to raise some issues. We are going to give people some tools. And I really hope bring some people together to know that if you've been thinking about this in your part of town, and I've been thinking about this in my part of town or in my part of the state, that we can work together to make a change.
All right. Nkenge Hymer-Johnson from the Urban League of Portland, thank you so much.